from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
For CBS Sports, he's on X at David W. Cap. David, how's it going?
What's up, Gabe? I'm doing okay. How about you?
I am doing well, besides the fact that I got my ass kicked by your Olympics basketball quiz on Twitter, on X. I got my ass kicked. You even put out an answer key for us. You're doing a great service.
You know, I was going to look for a place to make a quiz, an online quiz that I could embed in my CBS story to, you know, drive engagement, because the longer people stay on the page, the better. And a quiz is a great way to do that. But I couldn't actually find anywhere that would let me make a free quiz. So I was just like, you know what, screw it. I'm just going to put it on Twitter and let the people enjoy it. So, it's interesting, man. A lot of college talent out there in the Olympics. And I thought South Sudan looked okay today. They represented well in a very, very difficult matchup against the U.S.
Yeah, the only one I did know, because we talked about it the other day, is which Big 12 program has the most former players competing. The fact that it is Iowa State, that's the one. That's the one I did know, which completely throws me for a loop. And by the way, South Sudan, was it Mariel Shayok?
Yeah.
Iowa State.
Yeah, he was originally at Virginia, then went to Iowa State. That guy was getting buckets, man. Like, you know, you realize, like, wow, he's getting buckets against Team USA, and he's not even in the NBA. Like, that's how good the talent is.
Do we know where he plays?
Ooh, last I heard it was China. I think he was getting buckets in China. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd imagine he's pretty damn good over there. I'd imagine he's probably doing pretty well.
Yeah, you would think, but Jimmer Fredette was also getting buckets in China, and Team USA with Jimmer Fredette is getting worked in that 3-on-3 competition. They are 0-2 in the 3-on-3.
Yeah, now South Sudan did play relatively well, even though they got beat 103-86. It wasn't as close as last time, where it was 101-100, and the U.S. barely survived. But really what it comes down to for the U.S., I talked about this off the top, it feels like Steve Kerr's uncomfortable in his position right now. Didn't play Jason Tatum in the first game, then starts him in the second game. We know that the starting lineup, the only person that was in the plus and the plus minus was Devin Booker. He doesn't quite understand how to manage this whole thing. It feels like, and I put this out on socials this morning, it feels like the politics and the talk surrounding the team sways him more than it should.
Maybe. He also sat Joel Embiid for this game today, which I don't know if that was what the strategy behind that was, other than South Sudan's going to try to spread the floor. They're going to try to go up tempo. Maybe this isn't the best matchup for Joel Embiid. But that's a bold coaching decision to keep a guy like that on the bench who worked so hard just to be able to represent the United States. And you can't imagine that Joel Embiid was very happy about that, but that was a bold coaching decision by Steve Kerr. So I still kind of feel like pool play is feeling things out, and they're trying to build up enough data and enough examples of how different guys play together so that when the elimination round gets here, they'll feel like they know who their rotation should consist of. So I'm willing to cut them some slack. Until they get to the medal round and U.S. wins anything other than gold, I am willing to cut Steve Kerr some slack.
But here in Memphis, I don't think there's a lot of people that are willing to cut Steve Kerr a whole lot of slack, though. And I think I fit right there with most of Memphis.
Yeah. What's the code? What's the code say about how to coach in the Olympics, Steve?
Do you have enough data on the code? Do we know? Yeah, I don't know.
What is the Olympics code? Somebody in the media needs to ask Steve Kerr. You know, obviously he is the expert and the master of the code.
Yeah, and they could be playing Dylan Brooks soon. So like he's got to get ready to get his code talk ready.
Yeah, we need him to let us know in advance of that matchup, you know, because Dylan needs to know what the code is in international basketball. So obviously, he would never want to do anything to upset Steve Kerr.
Yeah, I want to bring this up, though. Speaking of sort of the Grizzlies, the back and forth they've had with the Warriors, Luke Kennard finally signed today, 1 year, $11 million. I like this Grizzlies team. I like this active roster. I like their 10-man rotation. Seems pretty nice. Like, probably the best. And obviously some things have to go right. Zach Edey's going to have to live up to expectation. G.G. Jackson, Vince Williams Jr., same thing. But it feels like this is probably the best team that they have assembled in the Kleiman era.
It's definitely a deep team, and it feels now like it might be a good three-point shooting team. If Desmond Bane is healthy, you got Luke Kennard back. Maybe Cam Spencer and Jalen Wells are people who can play games for you or participate over the course of an 82-game season. They sure showed the ability to fill it up during summer league. So, yeah, it's coming together nicely. They've done a nice job of surrounding the core with competency. I'm still a little worried. Like, I still wish they had a true backup point guard. Maybe Scottie Pippen Jr. ends up growing into that role, but yeah, that's the one thing where you still miss Tyus Jones, and you look at how good he was last year in Washington with that ridiculous assist to turnover ratio, and you wonder like, okay, why did the Grizzlies always have such a good record in the past? You know, prior to last season, in games that Ja Morant missed, and I think a lot of that was due to having a Tyus Jones on your roster. You don't have that, but I mean, I'm nitpicking. I think
I've talked myself into though is you can you know, get some minutes out of Marcus Smart or Desmond Bane, somebody like that, with the second group. And then Scottie Pippen Jr. has 50 games he can play with a big club. I've talked myself into that not being the biggest of issues, but I can see where people are a little bit concerned.
Yeah, and it's a regular season thing, too. It's just, can you slog through those back-to-backs when Ja might not play both games without a true backup point guard? I think, you know, maybe Scottie Pippen Jr. is that guy. He is more of a score-first type of player, it feels like, than Tyus Jones was. And in the end of the day, though, you know, as I've mentioned to you in the past, you know, you weren't going to get a ton of value from Tyus Jones in the playoffs. And so when you look at this lineup, it's like, okay, what can they be when they get to the playoffs? And I know we're putting the cart ahead of the horse there by just assuming that this team is back in the playoffs in a really tough Western Conference, but if they get there with this lineup, I think it's a pretty good playoff-caliber lineup.
Mm-hmm. Now, on to college football, because I saw this. ACC preseason media poll came out. Florida State gets 81 of the first-place votes. Clemson with 55 in second. I like Clemson over Florida State this year, but we'll see how it all plays out. But what it brought to my attention, because I just got done before you got on, with my five questions about Memphis football heading into this year, really big inflection point for this program. September 14th is going to be the number one team in the AAC preseason poll versus the number one team in the ACC preseason poll. That should be pretty fun. Now, let me ask you about that matchup, though. What do you think about that matchup? And I know it's going to be on the road. It's going to be really hard for Memphis to pull out a win. I'm not going to count it out, but I think it's going to be really hard. But how do you think Memphis can manage that game?
They can manage it fine. They're talented enough to go down there and keep that game close and to hopefully go into the fourth quarter feeling like they've got a chance to win. When the lines come out, I would guess Memphis is going to be something like a 9.5-point dog at Florida State, and depending on which way the line goes, I could see that getting to 10.5. I don't see a scenario, though, where Memphis goes down to Tallahassee as a 14.5-point underdog, though. I mean, I think they're going to have a chance to be in that game. The greatest I could see that line going to is maybe something like 13.5, because, you know, this Florida State team does have to replace quite a bit. They don't have Jared Verse anymore. They don't have Keon Coleman. They don't have Jordan Travis. Those are really high-caliber star players that Mike Norvell has to replace. So there's definitely an opportunity for Memphis to go down there and keep that game close. And I wouldn't rule out an upset. You know, when you go to look at the money lines that week, if Memphis is something like plus 300 or plus 400, yeah, absolutely. I think there's going to be some people out there saying, yeah, I'm going to take Memphis, you know, with those sorts of odds, because that's a team with some offensive firepower. And, you know, Florida State's going to be really good, but I don't think they're going to be a surefire lock to be a top 10 team at season's end.
How have you felt about the DJU experience in collegiate football? I mean, at Clemson, a lot of ups and downs, a lot of downs that first year, and he sort of picked it up that second year. Oregon State turning around, handing the ball off to Damian Martinez. That worked out for him, and he was solid last year. But it's never been quite what we thought it was going to be. But I also think people overdo it a tad bit, right, when they say that he's just been a miserable, not very good college quarterback. I think when you talk about expectations, maybe he hasn't lived up to them. But I still think he is a solid guy to have behind center. I don't think there's any other way to put it.
Okay, this comp just came to mind. And hear me out on it and let me know what you think. But think about the situation that Graham Mertz was in transferring from Wisconsin to Florida this time last year. He had been amazing in his collegiate debut. If you remember, I believe they were playing Minnesota, and he just lit it up for Wisconsin.
Yep.
And then just the rest of his career was just very and he never was able to live up to that first game and that first glimpse we got of him. But then he goes to Florida, gets a fresh start, and has a really good year. Well, DJU, if you flash back to when Trevor Lawrence was
Notre Dame
hurt, yeah, he was unbelievable the first time we really got to see him in substantive action. But then he set the bar so high early that he struggled to meet it the rest of the way. But now he goes with an offensive guru in Mike Norvell, and he gets his last chance to reach his potential. Maybe there's that Graham Mertz sort of
mark there.
That's an optimistic outlook, but DJU does have the talent. And if Mike Norvell can unlock it, then there is definitely room for him to be a really high-caliber, all-ACC type of quarterback.
Now, let me ask you this. DJU at Clemson, like, there was debate, and mostly people blamed it on DJU. He had, like, what, 9 TDs and 11 interceptions. It was not good. But, like, we look at Cade Klubnik, he's never really lived up to the billing. He's never been that great for Clemson to this point. It's been a sort of a defensive-led team. Do you think, and obviously it falls somewhere in the middle, but if you're picking one side, was it more Clemson or more DJU? Who do you blame it on more?
Probably Clemson. And we're about to find out this year with Garrett Riley in his second year at Clemson as the offensive coordinator. Hopefully some more competent receiver play. This is a big prove-it year for Clemson as an offensive system and as a program in general, because you go from, you know, Deshaun Watson to Trevor Lawrence, and you got this really good legacy of quarterbacks even dating back beyond those two. And then it, as of late, it's been a little bit of a dud. But I do think that Clemson's got a shot to kind of prove that they still got it offensively this year. If they stay healthy at receiver, I think Air Riley's going to get a little bit more of a green light from Dabo this year to do his thing. You know, then you know, maybe some of this narrative shifts away from Clemson. But as of now, you know, yeah, they that program has underperformed with two really, really high-caliber players that have come after Trevor Lawrence.
I mean, people are going to laugh at me when I say this, but one of the most important hires they've made in the past couple of years, Matt Luke is their O-line coach now. I know they have a tremendous amount of talent on that side, and they have maybe struggled a little more than they should have in the trenches, but Matt Luke is the type of guy that can get it out of them, get that run game going, make Cade Klubnik comfortable back there in the pocket. I like that hire.
Man, that guy has retired from coaching like three different times in the last decade,
yep.
And he just keeps coming back. He is a pretty good O-line.
Well, when you put million-dollar O-line coach gigs on his front doorstep, it's hard to deny those.
Apparently so. The last I heard, though, he was calling it quits at Georgia because he wanted to spend more time with his family, but I don't know, maybe he got sick of his family or just decided he needed $1 million. Either one of those things, whatever it is, I don't know. But, yeah, that's a great addition. That's a fantastic addition to the Clemson staff. All that to say, though, I don't think I'm giving Clemson any more of a shot in week one against Georgia,
right,
just because they have Matt Luke. But
true.
Yeah, it is interesting, though, going back to that poll, though, to see Florida State so heavily favored over Clemson, a pretty substantial margin in the first place votes there. So that's a level of, I don't know, disrespect, can we call it that, for Clemson that hasn't really been seen in several years.
Well, I get it. I mean, we would be lying if we say we didn't understand why people are a little bit out on Clemson. No portal additions. Seems like Dabo's not changing with the times.
Right. But maybe we're putting too much stock into Florida State. I mean, how sure are we? How sure are we that
not
wasn't
very
a one-year? Yeah, it might have been a one-year flash. I mean, I'm not saying Florida State's going to drop off. We know the caliber of coach that Mike Norvell is, but that was a special team that got some good breaks last year to go undefeated. And now they got to strap up and show that they can do it again without all those star players who I mentioned off the top. So, I mean, I think the ACC is pretty top-heavy. I don't think it's like the Big 12 where there's seven or eight teams that could win it. But, I mean, there's legitimately, I think, four or five teams that you could make the case for in the ACC. So I guess maybe a tad surprised to see Florida State. I guess they're there by default. It's like they're the reigning champions. If you don't have a strong conviction, you vote in this thing, you vote for,
yep,
Florida State.
Yep, and Miami's going to be a tricky one. We've covered that, though, in the past. One thing that did surprise me before I move on to the Tennessee Volunteers and their new quarterback, SMU picked as a top-half team. Number seven in their inaugural year in the ACC. So they're thought of very highly around the country, and in the ACC,
yeah,
in particular.
There are some interesting placements in this ACC preseason poll. Wake Forest at 15, man. I realize that like NIL has kind of zapped Dave Clawson's fastball, but that guy can still coach. Wake Forest is not going to be the 15th best team in the ACC, which, by the way, has 17 teams now, for everybody out there who struggles to keep count in this era. And then another one that kind of sticks out to me is North Carolina all the way down at 8. And look, I get it, but they're bringing in Jeff Collins as their defensive coordinator. And, yeah, for the first time in a while, they don't have that household name at quarterback. You know, obviously, you know, you have a Drake May there for a while and some good players before him. But, like, UNC as a mid-tier at best team in the league behind SMU, that kind of surprises me a little bit too.
Yeah, Dave Clawson, though, I don't know. Did he, I mean, getting out and potentially getting another job, I don't know if that ship has sailed. We'll see how he does this year. I've always been a big fan of the Clawfence, though. One of my favorite plays in college football has been, and he did it pretty heavily a few years ago, and he did it with Sam Hartman as well, the slow ride RPO sort of looky with a slant across the middle, that slow ride RPO that he did for years. And he did it with Jamie Newman first.
Have you implemented that in your CFB 20?
Not yet. The RPOs are kind of tricky, aren't they, at times, especially with the ones that go across the middle. You have to be careful about those linebackers making a late read.
I won a game with Baylor online earlier, hitting a clutch RPO in the fourth quarter to the slot. So not to give away my secrets to you, but yeah, look out for that one the next time we play.
Oh, the Penn State. I'm still rocking with Penn State. I found the ticket. I'm telling you, David, I found it. Know exactly what I need to do.
And I
play with them just like Penn State would play.
Well, have you noticed the way you play with a certain team on there, like talking yourself into now believing that Penn State's going to win the national title?
Yeah,
because of how good you are with them on the Xbox?
Yeah, Drew Aller's a stud Heisman candidate this year. Come on. Nick
yeah,
Singleton
right, exactly.
might be a Heisman candidate this year. Yeah, I've talked myself into it. Hell yeah.
The way you're running with Nick Singleton, I wouldn't be shocked if you did talk yourself into it.
Now, on to Tennessee. Nico Iamaleava, their new quarterback. And is that how you say it, by the way?
I believe it is Iamaleava.
Iamaleava. Iamaleava. Okay. But he said he liked playing on the road more. They did their media day, mm-hmm, before they started practice. He said he liked playing on the road more. This, honestly, I know this is corny, made me believe in what he can put out there on the field. He seems like an absolute dog.
Well, yeah, he is. I mean, he is that that talented. That's a bold statement, though. When you play at a place like Neyland Stadium and you run through that tee 7 or 8 times a year, and you know you hear the decibel level reach what it reaches to say that you prefer playing on the road. That's also an interesting comment from somebody who's actually really never played on the road. So let's maybe pump the brakes.
Well, but being able to hush people up, I'm telling you, just from like being in those situations, being able to get people to shut up is so awesome. It's so awesome to just run it up in someone's face on the road.
Yeah, Gabe, I have no concept of that. I mean, I believe you when you say that, but I can't relate to that. I've never been in a hostile environment in real life. But that's interesting. But he's good. That's going to be tested, man. Because look, they're going to Oklahoma. They're going to Athens this year. They're going to Georgia between the hedges. And, I love the brashness. I love the confidence. I think he's got the game to back it up. But let's just see how much he still enjoys going on the road once he gets through playing at Georgia in mid-November.
Do you think Tennessee fans take a little exception to that? Probably not. Probably not too much with what Nico said.
They're in the honeymoon phase right now, and they are coming off of what I think most fans would call some disappointing, slightly underwhelming quarterback play with Joe Milton, because Hendon Hooker set that standard so, so high. And it's going to be really difficult for anybody to match that standard. I mean, this might sound crazy, but I would put the year that Hendon Hooker had in 22 at Tennessee up there with the best quarterback season we've seen from anybody at Tennessee other than Peyton Manning. And I think you can argue that he was up there on par or close to anything Peyton Manning did with his performance. Hendon Hooker was that good.
The matchup, the duo of him and Jalin Hyatt that year was ridiculous. Like, it was. Seriously.
Right. And so, and look, even if Nico is as good as Hendon Hooker, does he have Jalin Hyatt? I don't think he does. So I think he can be better than Joe Milton. And I think Tennessee fans will appreciate that, but I don't know that he's going to be as good as Hendon Hooker, because Hendon Hooker was a special fit with some really good skill talent around him, and that was a special sort of season. And, you know, and Tennessee's kind of going to be chasing that standard for a while. And, you know, I think obviously if they hit that standard, they're a playoff team, but I don't know that, you know, you're ever going to see Tennessee in this SEC go better than 10-2. And so if Nico's the guy who can get them there, great, but this is his first year as a starting quarterback. He's still a redshirt freshman with very little playing experience. So, you know, yeah, they're in that honeymoon phase with him now, and anything he says, they're gonna slurp it up and love it. But you know, let's let the guy get some tread off the tires a little bit here.
And you sort of answered it a little bit, but that was going to be my next question. How much of the Joe Milton experience do you think insulates Nico in year one?
Yeah, well, I think quite a bit. It's just a drop off there, and now that the expectations have been. They've been leveled a little bit. The 22 season was so euphoric. I think that's the word, because it was only year two under Heupel. So Heupel hit faster than any coach has hit at Tennessee since Philip Fulmer. And so it made last year feel a little bit disappointing. But, you know, I think if Nico is even close to as good as advertised, you're going to see that hope persist, because you're going to get at least 2 years with them, and we'll see after that, because he'll be draft eligible after 25. But so long as he demonstrates promise and potential and you feel like he gets better as the season goes along, I think you're going to see Tennessee fans continue to buy in with the hope that if not this year, then 25 is going to be that year where, hey, we finally make that playoff push.
Yep, and you know what, folks? We'll be able to hear that right here on 92.9 FM ESPN, home of the Vols, right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. But, David, I'm going to let you roll. We'll talk again on Friday.
All right, brother, sounds good.
Appreciate it. That's David Cobb at David W. Cobb on X, CBS Sports college football and college basketball writer. Make sure you go check out all of his work, cbssports.com. And he is brought to you by Oxbow Every Day. And that is the family-owned and operated retail store that's been making waves in Memphis for over a decade. Get over their convenient location right off of Poplar. Everyone drives Poplar every day. But when you're headed to 240, you get off, you go to June Road. It's right there behind the Amoco Station. Off Poplar on June Road behind the Amoco Station. And when you get there at 964 June Road, to be exact, two-story storefront, top floor is going to be all the hunting and outdoor essentials. You can get a gift for yourself. You can get a gift for someone else, that hunter in your life. They have that on the top floor, and then the bottom floor, gift-giving destination of Memphis. Again, you can buy a gift for yourself or someone else. But they have vintage vinyl for you music lovers out there. They have the sports memorabilia for the sports lover in your life. They have autographs, great selection there. Some of your favorite players in town, out of town, SEC favorites. They have a great card selection, trading cards for Major League Baseball are all in there. So get over to Oxbow and check that out. And then the clothing is the best in town in the best brands. Genteel, Free Fly, Fair Harbor, Duckhead, Mizzen, and Maine. They have your favorite teams, Grizzlies, Tigers, all your SEC favorites yet again, Arkansas, Alabama, Tennessee, you name it, they have it over 964 June Road. And you can get a polo, button down, nice slacks, some shorts. They have every bit of clothing you could possibly need, from as casual as it gets to as nice as it gets. Again, over at 964 June Road. And you can get all this stuff online as well at their online shop, shopoxbow.com. Again, shopoxbow.com. And the way you tell them that I sent you online is you use my promo code. You go fill up your shopping cart with whatever your heart desires, and there's going to be a spot to put in a promo code. Use mine, The Gabe Show. All caps, no spaces, The Gabe Show. And you'll get 20% off that online order at shopoxbow.com. Again, 20% off. But whether you're going online or in-store to 964 June Road, remember to shop local, shop Oxbow. Now, there's a massive wide receiver contract in the NFL that was signed last night. It continues an offseason where wide receivers are getting paid. We'll tell you who got that contract next. Another record-setting wide receiver extension in the NFL. This time, the Bears sign their 27-year-old wide receiver DJ Moore to a four-year, $110 million extension with $82.6 million in guarantees. He officially now holds the record for Bears contract extension. This is the largest extension in Bears history. And then $82.6 million guaranteed is third all-time among wide receivers. But when we look at this list of all these wide receivers that have gotten paid, Justin Jefferson, DJ Moore, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jalen Waddle, Nico Collins, AJ Brown, Devontae Smith, Michael Pittman, Jerry Jeudy, that's all been this offseason. It's absolutely nuts. The wide receiver market is going off, and DJ Moore is the next in line. And I like this for the Bears. You lock up a guy who is very young, for the most part. He has not crossed the 30 plateau. He caught for 1,400 yards with Justin Fields throwing him the ball. Now he has Caleb Williams for the foreseeable future, for at least the end of this contract extension. It makes a whole lot of sense. The Bears want sustained success, and I think locking this guy up the way they did is one of the best ways to go make that happen.
How do you think it affects the CeeDee Lamb conversation?
Oh, gosh, I don't know if it does at all. I thought 2 days ago, we got plenty of news, or at least reports, that it was going to be signed by the end of the day. 4 years, I think $136 million. Never happened. You have CeeDee Lamb, Ja'Marr Chase, Brandon Ayuk, Tyreek Hill waiting this whole thing out. I don't think this one affects them in particular. He's seventh from a per-year valuation standpoint. But, my gosh, the more people that sign, I guess the more you drive up the price. I guess that's the best way to put it. But I think for the Bears in particular, this was a good move at the right time. And when you look at that wide receiver core heading into the future, him and Roma Dunze have the best chance to stick. And Roma Dunze, you know, has 4 years of cost control with being a first-round pick in this year's NFL draft. You have DJ Moore staying there for the long term, and you have one of the best slots of the last 10 years in Keenan Allen, who's aging, who's been oft injured as of late. You lock up the guys you need to lock up, and then we'll see what happens in the next couple of years now that you have Keenan Allen in that fold.
It's just crazy when you go back and you look at the history of Bears receivers and how empty it really is.
Yes. Yeah, 100%. Johnny Knox is still... Do you remember Johnny Knox?
I remember Johnny Knox.
He's still a damn legend there because of what, 2 years worth of
Brandon Marshall.
Brandon Marshall is a legend there. I mean, they have been very thin there, and now they're as loaded as anybody in the NFL.
I just went and looked for fun just at their best wide receivers ever list on one of their, you know, blog websites in Chicago. Most of them, there are tight ends in it, a lot of tight ends. and then Walter Payton and Matt Forte, who are what position did they play, Gabe?
Running back.
Running
they
back.
Sure did. Yeah. Now, I heard Jason Smith, who is a Bears fan, talk about this earlier and about this Bears team. I think offensively, they will be probably a top 10 group. I think they
they're going to be fun.
A really good chance to be very fun. Now, what I heard Jason say earlier, and I guess I'm throwing a little bit of shade, he said that that defense he expects to potentially be a top 10 group. I would lower your expectations for that defense. I like what they've done. I mean, they've done a really good job. Jalen Johnson, we understand he was a first-team All-Pro. Jaquan Brisker is really solid in that secondary. You brought in Montez Sweat, who was great once he came over from the Commanders last year. I still don't know how high of expectations you should have for that defense. I think that offense is the one that you need to pay attention to as a potential top-10 group in the NFL.
To be fair to Jason, they did have the 12th overall defense last year.
I understand. A lot of that was backloaded, though.
That is true.
A lot of that was down the stretch of the season. They were great. I guess that there is that shot that they can break into there, but I want to see how that all ages. I still think that's going to be an offensively inclined team, and you're going to have to wait to see if that defense makes something happen.
So they were 25th in passing defense.
Yes.
So it seems like maybe the run is where they get their bread and butter.
Yes. So we'll see how it all ages. But I do like, it seems like the Bears, now that they're off the Justin Fields train, on the Caleb Williams train, they are a team who has a little bit of foresight. And Ryan Poles, since taking over, has gone up and down with how he's viewed within that fan base, within that city. I think he is on the up and up. I think he has shown that he has some real GM chops. He has shown that he's going all in here, and no one's going to fault him for it. Now, it could all go bad and completely, you know, bottom out and look miserable, but I don't bet on that. I would bet on the opposite. I would bet on this Bears team being a challenge for the Lions in the next couple of years in the NFC North, even though I believe the Lions will get over top.
What's a successful season for the Bears next season? What do you think is a fair bar for success?
You get to 9 wins, feel good. You get a winning record. Simple. I think that they still could be a wild card team. I really like their chances to go make that happen. But 9 wins, right? Get to a winning record. Build on year one with Caleb Williams. I can view that as a success. And even if they get to about 8 wins and they still have a losing record, I think success could be defined as Caleb Williams showing that he can be your franchise quarterback and can be one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. If he can throw for 4,000 yards, which, mind you, I have to put a finger in the air and then remind people, no Bears quarterback has ever done that. If he can get to 4,000 yards, have a decent touchdown to interception ratio, I think you could even define success as that.
That's
just
crazy.
Just to have some hope within that offense that has never been there before.
Here's how bleak the real history of the Chicago Bears have been. And that's why if you know a Chicago's Bear, a Bear fan in your life, they are a strong human being.
Yes.
They're also a loyal human being.
Yes.
The Hard Knocks trailer came out recently. Almost all of the highlights were the 85 Bears or Brian Urlacher. That's the only, or Devin Hester. That was like the three people that you saw. You saw 85 Bears, massive gap, Urlacher, Hester, and that was it.
You know what's funny about the Hester Urlacher years? You know who the quarterbacks were?
Grossman.
Grossman and Kyle Orton.
not terrible.
It's pretty bad.
It's not terrible.
No, that's miserable. That's really bad. That's really bad. You were a team that was competing in the NFC North with Rex Grossman and Kyle Orton. You can only imagine if you had a worthwhile quarterback in that position.
Just run the Wildcat.
Where you would have been.
Just run the Wildcat with Hester. Yeah. Just give him the ball and see what happens.
And they had a really good defense. They had a great
really
defense
good defense
at that moment.
Yeah.
And Lovie Smith handling everything. Tampa 2, shout out. I mean, it's amazing, though, to think the Bears have been at least okay, middling, successful franchise in the NFL, and they've never had a quarterback throw for 4,000 yards. Like, that's just, that stat, just on the surface, is, it boggles the mind.
Well, Rome was on a Chicago sports radio show, like, right the day he got drafted, or maybe the day after, and they were asking him, like, do you know how many yards, like, the leading wide receiver in Bears history has? And he guessed, like, a normal answer.
10,000, something like
And
that.
I think it was, like, 4,500 yards.
Yeah.
It was something, and he just straight up began laughing because he was like, oh, if things go well, I could do that within a few years.
Yeah. I mean, if he if he really becomes what the Bears expect him to become, that's done in 4 years, easily. He can catch for 1,000 yards for three straight years and have a nice 800-yard, 700-yard year this year and go make that happen.
It's apologies. Apologies to the Bears. The answer is 5,000 yards.
Okay. Yeah. You were way off.
I was way off.
Golly.
How disrespectful.
I can't believe you. You need help. My gosh. Also, if you have not seen this yet, Jeffrey Simmons and Buck Rising of 104.5 The Zone got into it yesterday. And there's more Jeffrey Simmons coming after Buck Rising. He had like a tent set up for 104.5 The Zone right by where the players come out and then the entrance and the exit into the locker room at their facility for training camp. And Jeffrey Simmons called him a P-word, like just went after him and said, you talk too much trash, blah, 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 blah. Did we ever figure out, though, like what exactly Jeffrey Simmons was mad about?
So Jeffrey looked it up, our Jeffrey Wright, and it seemed to have been a comment he made about effort that the team was showing and maybe specifically Simmons. We couldn't really find why. To be honest,
yeah.
Nothing stood out.
It was just criticism.
It was criticism. And to be quite honest, if it had been something really inflammatory, I feel like we probably would have seen it by now just
See,
on social media.
That's where I didn't understand. And Buck Rising, I got to give him credit. He did a good job of standing his ground. And I don't mind players.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition. You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
You know, standing up for themselves. Like, you are well within your right to stand up for yourself. But what I would remind Jeffrey Simmons is that, one, the criticism that you receive, it comes with the position you're in and the money you make. For better or for worse, that's how this whole thing unfolds. And two, if you are going to come out and protect yourself, unless something is super inflammatory, which in this Buck Rising case, I don't think anything was overly inflammatory. Right? It was just it was criticism. It was, I don't think you're playing hard enough, that type of thing. I think when Jeffrey Simmons puts himself in that position where you're going after a media member and calling him a P word, that looks much worse on you than it does on the person you're going after. That those are the two things I would remind Jeffrey Simmons in this situation. Now, as of today, I think Jeffrey Simmons and Buck Rising have done the right thing. There was a picture put out by Paul Kuharsky, who's been covering the Titans for years and years and years. And it looks like they made amends, shook hands, and said, you know, talked man to man. Which it sounded like Buck Rising wanted to do yesterday on the air when Jeffrey Simmons was coming
after him. Yeah, he kept saying, like, we'll do this after the interview. Like, let me get off air. Just let me get off air.
Yeah. It was strange, though.
It was strange.
And Jeffrey Simmons, again, I have no problem with him protecting himself, but you got to understand the look that you put out. You got to understand how you're conducting yourself could come back on you and make you look bad in the public eye. And I thought yesterday, with that whole situation and how it unfolded, I thought Jeffrey Simmons was the one that looked worse in that situation.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And it's just, I don't know about the landscape of Nashville radio, but it does seem like, because I just tried to find if there was anything really inflammatory that he said. And it seems like that most of people's opinion is like, if you're going to go after anybody, he was the wrong one to go after. It sounds like that their criticism may have come from other people and he was just first guy he saw.
Yeah, and then you just, you invite people to speculate more and criticize you more when you do that to a media member. Now, final thing I want to bring up, and this is according to Ann Steele of the Wall Street Journal, via the Sports Business Journal, the Kelseys, with their New Heights podcast, are seeking a deal in the range of 9 figures for a once-per-week New Heights podcast. $100 million for a once-per-week show is what is being reported out there. I understand it to a certain extent, but also, I don't. Also, for one show a week, $100 million seems to be a little bit overboard.
Good for them.
Yes.
Happy for them. That's a lot of money. It's a lot of money.
And obviously, this is obvious to me, the Taylor Swift tie-in
100%.
Is so massive for them to be able to break that barrier of 9 figures. I'd imagine they'll get that contract. They'll get something close. I wonder if whoever they sign with is going to ask for it more than once a week, though. Or is that going to be something that's in their deal where they still want to continue doing what they do?
I would understand once a week during the season. Outside of the season,
you should probably up those
probably,
numbers.
Probably up those numbers to about numbers. 2 or 3 a week.
Yeah. Yeah. I enjoy it, though. I enjoy New Heights podcast.
I enjoy it. You know, and I said it yesterday with Jeffrey. I do think the show is a bit overblown of how good it is, but it's still good.
It's always been hard for me, though, with anything in media personalities, shows. It's always been hard for me to understand the real valuation of them.
Yeah.
Like, do I think Stephen A. Smith, for example, is a $25 million per year man? No. Do I think Tom Brady, as an analyst at Fox, is worth $36 million per year, what he's going to get paid to call games this year? No. Like, it's always been hard for me to understand the real value of the medium. And I know I have a show and I want to get paid as much as possible for it, but it's always been hard for me to understand how you're recouping that money on the back end. When ESPN pays Pat McAfee $100 million, do you really ever see that money? Do you ever see that come back into your pockets? And certainly, do you make a profit off of that ever? That's always been my question with all of these media conversations and the money that gets thrown around. It's just hard for me to fathom.
It's all about advertising.
I guess so. But you have to get a hell of a lot of advertising to make up $100 million for a once-per-week show. Advertisers ask for more than that,
usually. I mean, based on the money they're getting, that has to mean their audience per week is crazy.
It's something that, I wonder what it is. We need to do some research there. It's got to be nuts.
And I do wonder how many of it, I wonder how many, like, the subset of Swifties that watch the show or listen to the show.
Yeah, and that's worldwide, too.
Right.
I guess we'll figure
more. Good for
them. Maybe figure out, once they sign a contract, maybe we'll figure out more about that.
Good for them. I'm happy for them, the Kelsey brothers.
Now, small talk is on the way. Stick around.
92.9, we talk ball every weekday from 4 till 7 p.m. Except right now, it's time for Big Man Small Talk on 92.9's Gabe Kuhn Show.
And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. Now, one of the big stories over the weekend was the rollout by Marvel. And I'm not going to act like I'm some Marvel guy. I have watched some of the movies. It's hard to avoid them. There's so many, and they are relatively entertaining. I definitely watched all the Iron Mans, but that's where this goes. Robert Downey Jr. has been announced as Dr. Doom after already being Iron Man. Now, I'm going to ask you, Connor, because you would know more probably and better than me. My opinion on looking at that and seeing that, they made a lot of money and had a lot of success off of Iron Man and Robert Downey Jr. It seems like going back into that well it's a little bit redundant and desperate. I mean, am I off base with that?
I'll give you desperate. I don't know about redundant, but desperate for sure. It's definitely desperate. And they're also bringing back the Russos. I think it's also, you know, the Russos needed to come back to Marvel because they tried to make a couple movies away from Marvel and they were just not good. They were pretty bad. Pretty bad movies. But it's very odd. The way I found out, I was literally walking out of Deadpool Wolverine. And I got the notification and 1,000 texts from people that were like, oh my God, have you seen Robert Downey Jr.? And I was immediately had to text my guys, JT Force, because I knew he was going to know, like, what's going on here. And I said, how is this going to work? I do think it's desperate. I also think it could be kind of cool. I have issue with the amount of money he's getting, $100 million. That's crazy. Like, that is just, we shouldn't be paying a single actor $100 million. I understand that what he did for Marvel and he helped get the whole thing going, but $100 million, that's the budget for Oppenheimer. That is crazy. Right. I also think that Robert Downey Jr., he 100% played the I'm done with comic book movie stuff so that he could win an Oscar for Oppenheimer, and as soon as he got that Oscar, he was like, I'll take that check now.
Yes.
I think it could be cool. It seems like the idea of it is going to be, he is going to be a variant of Tony Stark. So he won't technically be Dr. Doom. He'll be Dr. Doom, but it's more of a variant of Tony Stark. Because it's Secret Wars. It's Secret Wars. That's the Marvel comic that they're basing it off of. So there is a pathway to them doing it, and it is pretty cool. I will say overall, though, it is desperate. I'm just not up in arms about it and upset about it like others are, because I do think it could be cool. If they pull it off, it'll be pretty awesome that you have him playing Tony Stark and Dr. Doom, especially if he's a variant of Tony Stark. That would make the most sense.
Yeah, it's just, I'm sorry.
Was that Spanish to you, everything I just said?
No. I hear what you're saying. It is a little bit of Spanish to me when you're talking about the comics. I've never read it.
It's also just very true that they weren't planning to go this way, and then everything that happened with Jonathan Majors made them change their plan. He was going to be the big bad moving forward for a very long time.
The public reaction, though, was very similar to what I said, though. Right?
No, I think you're right. And that's why I am just holding out of RDJ's awesome. I enjoy him in Marvel movies. I want to see, if it doesn't work, I'll be mad about it then. Until then, I'm going to have some cautious optimism about it, while still recognizing it being desperate and while recognizing the amount of money he's making is quite ridiculous. Mm-hmm. All of these things can be true.
Yes. Now, off to Haley Welch, the Hawk Tua girl. Let's do this.
God, can we go back to Robert Downey? Can we talk about something else?
15 minutes of fame. 15 minutes of fame, because this is funny to me. Darren Rovell, actually. And see, I'm bringing up just two bad things. Darren Rovell and then the Hawk Tua girl. I mean, that's just like, seriously, we need to end the segment. That's usually how that would
work.
Can we
go to Parker?
Everybody said that she had 15 minutes of fame. So she, I'll give her credit actually in this sense. She's doing a good job of marketing. as badly as it started, she's doing a good job. She has an LLC now called 16 Minutes, and it's a playoff of 15 minutes of fame. And she's filed a trademark, Hawk Tua, with the intent to use it on mouthwash, gum, sunflower seeds, barbecue sauce. I think those make sense. Then she went hats, shirts, comedy shows, sports betting. Sports betting? What are we talking about? She is self-proclaimed, like she's been on like the media tour, and she proclaims herself funny, and I don't really see it yet.
Can I just ask a couple questions? One, has it even been 15 minutes? Or was
Not
it
really.
Like a week, 2 weeks? Two, this feels like it's coming a month too late.
Probably.
She should have had all this the day after she went viral. She should have gotten on the phone with the lawyer and figured it out.
Hawk Tua mouthwash and sunflower seeds definitely strike me as a good marketing ploy, though.
It feels like we're going to find all that at TJ Maxx.
I'm not buying it.
No, I'm just saying that's where we're going to see
it. I'm going to go get my Listerine or Colgate,
you know,
whatever the hell
section
it is.
Right as you're walking up to the checkout, and they just have all that stuff
sitting
there.
The little bottle. It'll be like a little bottle.
It's going to be the Hawk Tua special.
Yeah. And somebody's just going to be, it'll be a gag gift.
A lot of gag gifts, yes.
Yes, that's what it'll be. When you do your Secret Santa and you're just giving out some.
No offense to her.
You can't spend more than $20, you're going to get the Hawk Tua mouthwash.
I'm going to put it out there for the Memphis public. If you want to buy a Hawk Tua gift, just hand me the money. If you want to waste your money, give it to me.
What are you offering?
Nothing.
At least you get mouthwash in return for want to buy the Hawk Tua products.
My offer is this. Nothing. I got it. Not even the fee for the gaming license.
Well, but we will offer you more because the show will go on, and we have an hour three on the way. And opening it up, we have to talk about Luke Kennard's contract extension and the Grizzlies in general. Parker Fleming joins the program next right here on 92.9 FM ESPN.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Horse wrap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.